ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः नाम श्रेष्ठं मनुमपि शचीपुत्रमत्रस्वरूपम् रूपं तस्याग्रजमुरुपरीं माथुरीं गोष्ठवाटीं राधाकुण्डं गिरिवरमहो राधिका माधवाशं प्राप्तो यस्य प्रथितकृतया श्रीगुरुं तं नतोऽस्मि वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयतः पदकमलं श्रीगुरुन् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादान् सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च Hare Krishna, 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 Hare, Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare, Hare.
Yeah. Often in Vaishnava communities, agricultural communities, during summer time, morning program is one only for 1 hour, the whole morning program, because there are a lot of things to do on the farm. Is it correct?
The challenges of establishing agricultural communities in the, far from the equator. That means that in the summer you have long hours of light, means working hours. And as the English saying goes, you have to make hay while the sun shines, because the growing season is very short in most of Russia. In many places, less than 6 months. In our farm communities in India, in the ones I'm overseeing, we also have a truncated morning program, because it's so hot, and it gets hotter and hotter, and it becomes difficult to do any work during much of the year. It becomes difficult to work outside at midday. So the devotees, they finish the morning program by about 7:15. They have Mangal Arati, Japa period, then Guru Puja, deity greeting and Guru Puja, and then, yeah, by about 7 o'clock they're finished. But then in the heat of the day, at midday, they have kirtan and class. And again, after dark in the evening, after about 6 o'clock, 6:30 in the evening, again they have arati, kirtan and class. But if we say that here we should have a program after dark in the summer, it would become a very late program. And presumably, traditionally in this country, the farmers would work very hard in the summer and they couldn't do much outside in the winter. So you may have to make some truncation in the summer, but then in the winter you have long hours. You can have Shravan Kirtan camp every day for months. And that's for those who are engaged in agriculture. But if you're looking after cows, there's still a lot of work all the year round, looking after cows and goats and whatever else you may be looking after. And if you're more enterprising, there can be cottage industries to supplement the income, handicrafts, things like that. Because at our farm communities, it's not that everyone is farming. In traditional village society, it's not that everyone's a farmer. There are brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas, and shudras, and only the vaishyas are particularly, well, only a certain section of the vaishyas are engaged in farming. Some of them are engaged in business. And many shudras are engaged in labor work on the farm, but there are many other shudra occupations also. So in our Vaishnav community villages, there can be other occupations also, such as pottery, making clothes by hand, preserving foods and processing foods for sale, such as making varieties of herbal tea. Anyway, I'm getting a bit off the topic here, but I'm just elaborating on it. One major reason that Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish these rural Vaishnava projects is to save time for hearing and chanting about Krishna. At the same time, if we're going to do farming, and we also, especially if we also want to have modern conveniences such as cell phones, for which you have to have money, then you have to produce more than is required simply for survival, and then you get extra work. Anyway, that has to be seen among the members of the community, how to organize your life in a manner that makes your going to the farm worthwhile in terms of Krishna consciousness. There may be a lot of work, but the great advantage is that you're living with devotees. That makes a lot of difference. It is a very great difference between living in a devotional community and trying to prosecute your devotional life living in the midst of non-devotees. Asat sanga tyag e vaishnava cha, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was asked about the proper behavior of a Vaishnava, he immediately replied that giving up the association of non-devotees is characteristic of devotees' behavior. So exactly how to regulate your life on the farms in this latitude, you'll have to discuss among yourselves. In the farm communities that I'm overseeing in India, we have a lot of discussion before coming to any decisions about important things like this, because there are so many factors and subtle points to be considered. So I didn't answer the question exactly, but I gave some points to consider that you among yourselves can discuss and come to a proper conclusion. You may experiment also, cutting down on time for sadhana at one time of the year, maximizing it at another time of the year. You may experiment. But then you might find that going several months without intensive sadhana becomes spiritually a strain. Anyway, you work it out between yourselves. With your sincere endeavor to mold your life in such a way that you can always think of Krishna, and Krishna will certainly help you and give you the intelligence to decide what is best to do.
Dear Guru Maharaj, if devotees face serious difficulties trying to organize Vaishnava farm communities, can it be a viable alternative if they create some sort of communities as some plots of land near the city, like dacha, and if they work there during summertime and wintertime, they live in the city?
There's no question of if you're going to face serious difficulties. Definitely you're going to face difficulties in setting up rural Vaishnava communities. No one said it's going to be easy. But nothing good came very easily. You can make alternative communities. It wasn't what Srila Prabhupada stressed or even talked about. But you'll be left with the same serious difficulty that faces us, which is the reason, one of the main reasons that Srila Prabhupada wanted to set up these communities. By continuing to live in the city, not only do you have the difficulties of city life, it's not that city life is something like heaven, but you'll also have the serious difficulty of being in the company and surrounded by non-devotees, which is seriously non-conducive for devotional advancement. And for many of our devotees, those who are not self-employed, which means most of them, then we have the Bifale Shevinu Kripana Durajana. We're working for some karmi who doesn't care for Krishna consciousness at all. So don't think you can avoid difficulty. You can make some formula to avoid difficulties. Life in this world is difficult. But we should make the goal of our life turnam yatetana batat anumritya yavan. Before we leave this world, we have to do whatever we have to do to get out of it. We should be very serious about the difficult nature of this world. Pleasure is a misconception. The idea that we can be somehow happy in this material world is a misconception. Tapo divyam putraka yena satvam shudyed yasmat brahma sokyam tvanantam. We should be prepared to accept the difficulties required so that we can become purified. And attain to the platform beyond all difficulties, the platform of spiritual, the eternal platform of spiritual happiness. You'll probably find just as much difficulty in setting up a halfway community as a fullway community. The main difficulty, in my experience, in setting up these communities, it's not farming or building houses or even getting the money to put it all together. The main difficulty is loka sangraha. There is one term in Bhagavad Gita, loka sangraha. Bringing people together and keeping them together. The human factor is the most difficult. You think it's difficult to look after cows. It's much easier to look after cows than humans. Humans are much more crazy than cows are. So there's another indecisive answer, but I could have just said yes or no. Okay, what's the next?
Can Srila Prabhupada's books and lectures completely заменить общение с преданными, compensate substitute association with devotees if devotee association doesn't inspire us for devotional service? Can it be a substitute?
Well, we'll find again and again in Srila Prabhupada's books and lectures that he tells us to associate with devotees. He also said to read his books. I don't find any place he said that, well, you just read my books and to hell with everyone else. You try and find out good association. It's very important. If you can't find any association that you think is good enough for you, go and preach and make some devotees, and then you'll have association. Or If you can't find locally what you find to be good association, now we have the facility of the internet, and you can associate via the internet. There are many groups of devotees all over the world who read Srila Prabhupada's books together, who have online satsangs. So we shouldn't minimize the importance of physical association with devotees. And yeah, if we find the association doesn't inspire us, as I'm told, it's quite common here in Russia that you go to some meeting of devotees and they're talking about astrology and Ayurveda and psychology, but not much about Krishna consciousness. So if that doesn't inspire you, then again, you find the association, if necessary, on the internet or whatever.
Can we, if we worship Gaurani Thai, particularly during the festival, should there also be a picture of Radha Krishna? And should we also offer upacharas to this picture of Radha Krishna?
Well, Gaurani Thai worship Radha Krishna. So it's not so appropriate to have Gaurani Thai in the center as the main object of worship and their worshipable object at the side. They won't feel very comfortable. So you have to decide what is your mode of worship. Radha Krishna worship requires a very high standard. Sometimes it seems that devotees think that Gaurani Thai worship doesn't require any standard. They're very merciful and you can do any damn thing you like. But they should be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they should be worshipped as such. So yeah, I wouldn't generally recommend that if you're worshipping deities of Gaurani Thai and you have Radha Krishna on the side. No. Srila Prabhupada, he didn't institute this.
If in the small city, community of devotees, city yatra becomes bigger, there is no temple, they rent the hall for the programs, and devotees want to establish deities, community deities. Is it possible, and how it should be properly done?
From what I can see, largely all over the world, there is very little idea of how deity worship should be properly done. The consciousness that this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who I have to serve as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, seems to be largely lacking in many cases. Often devotees are very enthusiastic to install deities, but then when it comes to serving them, they're not so enthusiastic. And we find in so many temples, especially in Russia, that deities are being worshipped by devotees without Brahminical initiation or even without any initiation. And the great majority of devotees initiated as Brahmanas in ISKCON don't live like Brahmanas at all. So I recommend worship Gaurani Thai in your community center by the method that is most recommended in Shastra. Krishna Varnam Tvisha Krishnam Sangopangastra Parshadam Yagyai Sankirtana Prayerya Jantihi Sumedasaha. In the age of Kali, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, has appeared in a non-blackish form, along with his associates, weapons, and so on. Persons who are of good intelligence worship him by the sacrifice of the congregational chanting of the holy names. There should be deities established everywhere, But first we have to establish in our minds what it means to worship deities.
How can we overcome lack of understanding?
Oh, by the way, I just another point on that point. I understand that practically everyone else in our Vaishnava world would disagree with what I just said. But it gives me pain to see deities just, they're just left standing there and they're fed sometimes, or they're not given rest on a proper time and so many things, and no one seems to care at all. They're only deities after all. There should be dedicated brahmanas for serving deities. That means they have nothing else to do but serve the deities. Not that they have to rush off to work and then they leave the deities behind. Next question.
How can we overcome
lack? How can we? Another how can we question. Yes.
How can we overcome lack of understanding and misconceptions among many devotees about importance of Varnashrama? If even leaders of our society dedicate little attention to this idea of Varnashrama, or even opposite, they give seminars which undermine its importance.
My answer is, I don't know, and to a large extent I've given up on it. And I'm just trying to work with those who take it seriously.
Can we take prasadam, which was offered to the deities, but this prasadam was either cooked or offered by devotees with only first initiation?
It's clearly not to the standard given by Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas. Patrang pushpang palam toyam yome bhaktya prayachati tadaham bhakti paharitam ashnami prayatatmanaha. If one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, I will accept it. That is prasadam. So, but if we think that somehow or other we have to go through some ritual and just put anyone on to do the ritual, then where's the bhakti? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that the word prayatatmanaha means according to the proper systems. Then what is to be done? When standards are not followed, then the lower standard becomes the standard. We should take very seriously Srila Prabhupada's instructions. Isn't that what it means to that he's the founder, Acharya of ISKCON? I wouldn't reject that food which is offered in such a way to the deities, but I would try to do something about it, about the whole situation. And it isn't just a matter of, okay, give them Brahmin initiation, but you have to see if they're living an ideal life as Brahmanas. Anyway, I've spoken many, many times on these subjects, and probably some of these talks are in Russian also. Sorry if this all sounds very negative, but I'm just responding to the questions that are arising. Someone asked me, why do you always talk about what we shouldn't do? Why don't you talk about Krishna Leela? Yeah, but we've got to get qualified to enter Krishna Leela, and you can't just do whatever you like and enter Krishna Leela. It's not such a simple thing. By the way, I've given over 800 talks on Vishnu Sahasranama, glorifying the qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When I talk on controversial issues, we get so many hits. When I speak on Vishnu Sahasranam, less hits. So maybe I'm better known, even though I do speak a lot of what you could call direct Krishna Katha, but I'm better known for the kind of things that people think, yeah, this is great, I love to hear about all these things. After one morning here, I gave a talk on Vishnu Sahasranam. Later that day, someone said to me, oh, your talks are too long, and it's too, no, people can't listen to it. Can't win, can you? Anyway, I'm not trying to entertain you all. Sometimes I tell a few jokes. I can try and entertain you, but that's not the main purpose. Next question. Try and find a nice question.
There was a question.
I said maybe there's a conspiracy against me that they ask all these questions and then they say, see, he's always talking about all these things.
Dear Guru Maharaj, please accept my respectful obeisances.
Okay, thanks. Whew. So far, so good. Now, please accept my humble obeisances. Now I'm going to hit you on the head with a hammer.
While senior devotees who are close to me inspire me to receive initiation, I understand that I am not yet qualified, that I am not on the proper level. Is it correct if I decide to wait until I grow, or in this way I am missing your mercy? I am very grateful for you, to you for everything, and I don't want to let you down.
The simple answer to this question is, don't wait, come to the level. The risk of fall down is there, but we take initiation, we take a vow with the determination to follow properly. And yes, we do see that devotees struggle and not all maintain their vows, which is not good. But if we think that, well, first of all, I'll come to the platform where I know I won't fall down, and then I'll take initiation, it's putting the cart before the horse, to use yet another English saying. First I'll become a pure devotee, and then I'll take initiation. Because only then I know I won't fall away. But you can't become a pure devotee without going through the process. So if you're serious, then you follow the four regulative principles, chant a minimum of 16 rounds, and take initiation. If we're not 100% sure that I won't slip, then no one will take initiation. It's done with sincere intention and with the confidence that if I try, Krishna will help me. Guru and Krishna will help. That's why if someone falls, but they're trying, we generally don't severely blame them. It shouldn't be taken lightly, but at the same time we should see if someone's trying, but they slip, we help them to try to help them to come up.
What could you recommend to the devotees who want to move to some farm communities, and in order to do it, they are visiting various communities?
Yeah, good idea. See where you think you can fit in best. It is a very big move, no doubt about it. It does require a lot of commitment. In 1977, I was in our society in the UK. Due to the inclement climate, it's cold and wet, and our youthful foolishness or naivete, whatever you want to call it, of going out day after day in the cold weather on the streets selling books. That's not the foolish part. But then at night we'd sleep in the van with no heating, and because we didn't want to waste time cooking, we'd just take raw food. So not surprisingly, among others, I got various health problems. And I particularly had serious musculoskeletal problems. So I thought it best for my physical condition to go to a warmer climate, which is how I ended up in India. So as I was going to India, my GBC at the time, I was a young brahmachari, he very kindly phoned me up and said that so many devotees go to India with the idea of staying, but in a short time they come back. So if you're going to go, you go there and stay, don't come back. That was very helpful for me because I took that decision. Okay, I'm going to stay. And I went through many difficulties, but I had the determination to stay and serve Srila Prabhupada's mission there. So similarly, if you're going to move to the farm, you should know that it will be difficult for you in many ways. It's a big change to whatever you have been used to. So be prepared for that and take the decision that, well, whatever happens, we're going to stay. Which means that you should carefully choose where you're going to join. Now, it might sound from what I'm saying that it's like joining a concentration camp or something like that. Then why on earth should you want to join? In this regard, I would like to cite an anecdote, which I've cited many times, about one couple, husband and wife, who were leaders in pioneering our first farm community in India. Our, by our, I mean those run by my disciples. And he had a good job, earning lots of money in the city. But then, in conjunction with some other Grihastha couples, they decided, for the sake of our children's Krishna consciousness, we've got to get out of this demoniac city and make our own community. So they had started their community, and it was a few months after they moved to the land that I first went to visit that project. Or maybe it was the second time. I went there just when they... But anyway, I went there just a few months after they started the project. And my comment to them after seeing them there is that your faces have become black and bright. Black from being out in the hot sun, and when you have Indian skin, it tends to become quite black if you're out in the hot sun, instead of being locked up in some air-conditioned office, day in and day out. And bright, shining with happiness. They were seriously practicing Krishna consciousness before they went to the land. They had to be serious to make that decision. But the difference in their faces was visible. And several Grihastha devotees said to me, "Oh, thank you so much for starting these communities. We're so happy we've come here." Actually, I don't do anything except I talk and others do all the work. And some have moved to the farm and have not been able to stay. They haven't been able to adjust. So we usually have a testing period. Or we ask the devotees, you come for 2 weeks, then you go back to the city, then again come for 2 weeks after a little time. And like this, try to tried to ease them in. I really wish that Savyasachi Prabhu had been able to come here, but unfortunately he wasn't able to come. Maybe we should try again to get him to come. He's a very capable devotee. He qualified as a medical doctor. And he was preaching as a brahmachari and bringing many young people to practice Krishna consciousness. Then one time he said to me that, I'm reading in Srila Prabhupada's books and his conversations, he stressed so much these farm communities, and I'd like to dedicate my life to help to establish these. So that's what he's doing for many years. Anyway, for some reason or other, he wasn't able to come here. He should be in the Czech Republic. If he's not there now, he should be going there soon and he'll spend some time on our farm there. It's good if those who are setting up farm communities in this country, if they interact with each other, share their experience. Many, many questions arise and we can help each other by sharing our experience. Children growing up, young boys and young girls. Well, it can be problematic. Happily, I'm happy to say that in two of our farms now, we have children, well, especially in one of them, children who've spent most of their childhood on our farms are now married and on the farm. They married and they're still on the farm. So that's a great success. One thing at these farms is that just like you can feel the mercy of Srila Prabhupada when his books are going out, you can really feel the mercy of Srila Prabhupada in these farm projects. Maybe I'm just insensitive and out of touch and all that kind of thing, but I don't experience the same kind of mercy in this bridge preaching and astrology and all this kind of thing. Yeah, astrology, Ayurveda, they're part of Vedic culture, but the mercy of Krishna flows through pure devotional service and trying to fulfill the desires of the great Acharya. Srila Prabhupada didn't come from the spiritual world to teach us about astrology and Ayurveda. Just in case you might have any doubts about this. Okay, any other questions?
What will happen with a woman without diksha who sincerely serves her husband and children in Krishna consciousness and who sincerely dedicates herself to her husband's guru, their common guru and his mission? If guru will leave this world before her family obligations will allow her to follow the vow of chanting 16 rounds in order to get diksha, does she have chance to return to Krishna at the end of this life?
What happens if the guru passes away before she's able to withdraw sufficiently from her household duties to chant 16 rounds? Yeah. Well, there's not only one guru in the world. Something which has been going on and is still going on is that one of our godbrothers passed away about 2 years ago, and those who wish to take initiation from him are still doing so from other gurus. So maybe a more appropriate question would be, well, what if the woman passes away before she has a chance to follow everything Well, one thing is that there are many devotees who are very, women who are very busy in their family duties, but still somehow or other manage to chant 16 rounds and get initiated. It can be very difficult to have good sadhana, especially when you have newly born babies. And, you know, just look at these kids. They're just running around all the time. And when you have a few of them to look after all the time, then it can be hard to concentrate on your sadhana. You're absorbed in chanting the holy names, seeing the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. And in the meantime, two of your kids are pulling each other's hair out. Or pulling something over and smashing it. Their children are like monkeys. They need constant supervision. And they don't care about your sadhana. It may be some, you might think that Krishna sent them to destroy my sadhana. Let me take rest early so I can get up early before the kids wake up. So you take rest early. 11:30 at night. Ah! And there's all your plans for having a good night's sleep finished. If you sincerely want to serve Krishna, Krishna will look after you. And it's a great service to raise children in Krishna consciousness. And it's a great service to maintain your Krishna consciousness even while having a circus going on around you 24 hours a day, every day. With various wild animals. So yeah, Krishna will help. If you're sincere, Krishna will help. Hare Krishna. I'm going to take a break. You can also chant Hare Krishna while I take a break. Okay, so we have a little time. We're going to have a few more questions.
How important is it for married Mataji to cover her hair when she outside her house? Does it influence her spiritual practice?
Major topic of contention, especially in relation to the hijab. It's a major point of contention in India, in France. Well, consider why that practice is there. Why is it there? What is the point of it? Any suggestions? What about the ladies? What do you think? They've all got their heads covered. Yeah.
Because hair increase lust in men.
It's a matter of chastity, yeah. So it's helpful. Still in the villages in Russia, especially the babushkas, because they have that practice, they cover their head, right? That means that the young women used to do also. I used to go to Catholic church as a child. Men would be on one side, women on the other side. Women, heads covered with a veil. At least in the church, they maintain that. I doubt if it's maintained, and I'm pretty sure it's not maintained anymore. So it has its purpose, therefore is recommended. In South India, it's not the common practice. Although, according to some people I've spoken to, it used to be. It may be different in different communities. generally, the more high class the community, the more circumspect they are in the matter of male-female behavior.
What is the particular role of Srila Prabhupada and Diksha Guru in our life? Whom should we listen more? And
who should we
listen more? And how should we develop relationships with each of them?
How do you develop your relationship with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur? Gorky Shodas Babaji? Bhaktivinod Thakur? Through, we're initiated into the Sampradaya, which automatically links us to all the previous acharyas. We're talking about developing our relationship, but the first thing I don't find in Shastra so much about developing relationship. It's more about hearing and serving. It's your back to front Western psychology. Just like they talk so much about the relationship between husband and wife. But what about the duties and the responsibilities of the husband and wife? If everyone understands their position and their duties, then the relationship follows from that. That is the civilized, sane approach. And the insane approach at the root of so-called modern civilization is to talk about relationship based on your feelings. And of course, feelings change at every moment, practically. And the relationship, well, what he says, what does it feel like to me? It's self-centered. The relationship is based on sacrifice and commitment. That comes first. If we try to make relationship based on what we think things should be like, with it, then there's no basis. It's just wild. So similarly, in guru relationships, if we understand our business is to serve, surrender, and hear, and follow, relationship, then we won't be so hung up on my relationship with my guru. Your duty is to hear and serve, is not to dictate that my guru should be like this. I don't like him being like that. Hear and serve, and everything will follow. That is the spiritual platform. And the mental platform is thinking, oh, my relationship, worrying about your relationship. Well, why don't you worry about your duty, what you're doing, you're serving? And then these questions won't arise. Everything follows very naturally if we ourselves take the proper position. I once read a book by an American female psychologist who spent time in an Indian village, and she learned Hindi, and she went to all the women and she asked them so many questions. And one of the questions she asked the women was, do you love your husband? And she reported the responses in a manner which made you think that all the women are stupid. Their responses were stupid. First of all, the question, do you love your husband? And she said that many women were confused by the question. And the woman psychologist thought that was very strange. But the women who were asked the question thought it was a very strange question. And when in their confusion they say, yes, and then they say, why do you love your husband? And they become more confused. And from the American society confused by generations of Freudian psychology, that sounds completely stupid. A common answer, if they could answer the question at all, was, because he is my husband. And the American psychologists thought this was really stupid. They need a good dose of American psychological family advice so they can stand up for their rights and stop being contented housewives and fight with their husbands so they can have a better life and be happy like all us American women who don't have husbands and they feel they have to go halfway around the world to disturb people who do have husbands and are happy in their family relationship. Before Freud and all these idiots, people didn't talk about relationships. Oh, relationship, relationship, oh, relationship. They just got on with life, that's all. It's a very natural thing, but then you try and analyze it and put it under some microscope and make it scientific and you just get all confused. Why do you love your... You ask the woman, why do you love your child? Well, why, you know, what am I supposed to do? To hate the child? My dear husband, let's have a child so that we can stick pins into the child and spit in its face. I don't know. I've lived in India too long. I'm culturally inept to interact with the Western world. It's talking about the children being wild animals. The problem is that they remain wild animals throughout their whole life. A few years ago, a godbrother of mine sent me a video clip from a news reporting in Florida, which is one of the states of the United States of America, which maybe you know, because America advertises itself as the country which everyone should know everything about. So there was a hurricane coming in, and people were running away and locking up their houses. In the meantime, some daring thieves were thinking, hey, this is a great chance to rob all the houses. And people were just trying to get out, and the traffic jams, and people trying to get ahead of each other in the traffic jam. And one of the persons, one of the local people commented that you see that in a situation like this, the thin veneer of civilization collapses. You know that word veneer? You have some cheap balsa wood or something and you cover it with a thin layer of, it looks like very good high-class wood. But underneath it's cheap and weak. So this whole so-called civilization, a thin veneer. In New Orleans, in another city in the United States of America, there was a mass flood. The whole city became flooded a few years ago. And law and order, the whole system of law and order just broke down, and there were lootings and everything because the police couldn't control the situation. Now, in America and in the Western countries in general, they always show India as being a very backward and uncivilized country. But regularly there are floods because there's so much rain coming all at one time in the rainy season. In fact, Delhi is flooded right now. Eight areas of Delhi.
Многие районы Дели прямо сейчас затоплены.
But we never hear of mass lootings or any such thing because the police can't operate in such a situation.
Но мы никогда не слышим о том, что там происходили массовые грабежи, воровство из-за того, что полиция не может справиться в такой ситуации.
Anyway, Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, who came to the West,
the
madhouse of the Western world,
and gave Запад, Krishna consciousness.
Okay, take
Krishna.
You can take it.